no coherent strategy, and so, of course, it has had no results. The president has involved us in Haiti and in Somalia. Nothing of lasting value has been accomplished in either place, but billions were thrown at these problem areas. These are the actions and inactions of a truly ridiculous leader. For that reason, Bill Clinton is sentenced to be the butt of jokes for the rest of his life. This is poetic justice, but I'm still furious. It is not enough justice for this man. We Americans have the right to expect honest, disciplined leadership. We have the right to demand that our tax monies be spent responsibly. And we also deserve a leader who adheres to a decent standard of behavior within the walls of the White House. No matter what political philosophy you hold, you cannot question that Bill Clinton was awarded the greatest honor in the world and then blew it. No pun intended. The next time you see the president, please tell him he is ridiculous and always will be. I know it, and you know it. And behind that display of self-confidence, he knows it too. I guarantee it. Attorney General Janet Reno. This ridiculous, incompetent woman has been President Clinton's primary enabler. She clearly obstructed justice in the campaign finance investigation by refusing to appoint a special prosecutor. This decision was made despite the pleas of her top investigator on the case, Charles LaBella, and also the head of the FBI, Louis Freeh. Reno refused even to meet with LaBella to discuss his recommendations on the matter. Instead, she chose to downgrade his concerns, and then she denied him a promised promotion when he went public with his frustrations. It's true that the American public did not really care about the campaign finance disclosures, but the Department of Justice is not supposed to be poll-driven. When the Attorney General of the United States fails to do her sworn duty to uphold the law, that is way beyond ridiculous. It is serious, and it gets worse. Janet Reno cut sweet deals with Johnny Chung and others, so they received extremely lenient sentences in exchange for nothing. Chung himself told me he was shocked that the department's investigators never followed up on information that he willingly supplied. And why didn't they? That's only one of the questions I would like to ask Ms. Reno, except she refuses to let me interview her, preferring the rough-and-tumble questions Oprah throws at her. But there's more, much more. Janet Reno also refused to allow the FBI to wiretap Dr. Wen Ho-Lee's computer in the Chinese espionage investigation, despite overwhelming evidence that he was downloading sensitive military information. Dr. Lee was subsequently indicted. Ms. Reno also totally screwed up the Waco case and, according to the former chief of the Drug Enforcement Agency, refused to pursue Mexican drug lords aggressively. And then there's Elian Gonzalez and... these things are ridiculous enough, but the most ridiculous thing of all is that Janet Reno will be allowed to get away with every one of them. That is the justice we can expect from the Clinton Department of Justice. Her tenure as Attorney General has been one of the darkest times in the history of American law enforcement. The list of ridiculous only begins at the highest levels of government. They are to be found everywhere in our country. Larry Flint, the only thing more ridiculous than the Smutmeister himself, is that Hollywood decided to glorify him in a movie as a defender of free speech rights. This guy has piled up millions by hawking violent, degrading images of women, but somehow he became a hero to the socially concerned film community. Well, I'm all for free speech. I'm going to take advantage of it here. Larry Flint is the worst America has to offer. He brings new meaning to the word degenerate. There is no excuse for this man and his career. Ridiculous doesn't even begin to cover it. Charles Manson. If you're a viewer of my program, you know that I argue against capital punishment. For Charlie, I could make an exception. Is it sane to allow this vile murderer to be sitting around in a fairly comfortable Northern California detention facility? What good does he do for society except give TV interviews to Geraldo? Manson and others like him, thank God they're few, should be slapped with sentences of hard labor for their crimes, and they should do their time in a federal detention center in Alaska. They should be banished. That just might wipe the ridiculous grin off this monster's face once and for all. South Park, the movie and the show. This is probably the most ridiculous flick I've ever sat through. If you missed it, try to imagine a song-filled cartoon that features cute little kids cursing in vile and creative ways. I'm not kidding. That's what it is. Some critics called it brilliant. I call it subversive. Despite the critics and the hype, which included an Oscar nomination for one of its songs, South Park didn't make much money. I hope that's because level-headed people know what's ridiculous and what isn't. NBA ticket prices. If you live in the American heartland, you're going to have a hard time believing this, but it's true. To see a National Basketball Association game in New York or Los Angeles, you will have to shell out more than $200 apiece for tickets, parking, and a few eats. And you will not be sitting down in front with Spike Lee or Jack Nicholson. In fact, your seats will not even be good, and you may be in danger of getting altitude sickness. This is bad for the sport, and it's very ridiculous. Sex tonics. With the success of the drug Viagra, thank you, Bob Dole, we now have access to scores of potions designed to make you a sex-crazed caveman or cavewoman. The come on? Just take a little pill or sip a bit of some concoction and zoom! You turn into Bill Clinton in full grope mode. Now, if you want to spend your money on this stuff, go ahead. It's none of my business. But I am begging radio people, please discontinue your incessant advertising for these sex stimulants. These ads are ridiculous, and I don't want to hear about sex problems at 6 a.m. I don't know who you think your target audience is at that time, but please give me a break. I'm just trying to open my eyes and find out about the weather. Jerry Springer. Okay, he's an obvious medalist in the ridiculous category. I admit it, but there's no honorable way to leave him off the list. He is the real thing, really ridiculous. When you think about it, he's doing exactly what Larry Flint does. He debases other people in order to make money. To be fair, Springer does provide more humor than Flint, but we all know what drives the entertainment, Jerry, and it's ridiculous. Rosie O'Donnell's rants. Miss O'Donnell has talent. She works hard. She's gathered a lot of loyal fans. But what's going on with this political stuff? Rosie, if you're going to use your daytime soapbox to advance ideologies, can't you at least allow someone with some knowledge to question you about it? And I don't mean Tom Selleck. I respect anyone with a well-thought-out opinion, but pure propaganda on national TV needs to be labeled for what it is. There are usually two sides to every issue, Rosie. It's ridiculous to present only your side. Kate Moss, Calista Flockhart, and the rest of the Skull and Bones crew. Ridiculous doesn't even begin to describe these matchsticks with blow-dried hair. What's even more ridiculous is that some young girls imitate them, often to the endangerment of their health. Life-threatening conditions like anorexia nervosa and bulimia are reinforced or even inspired by these high-paid models. Besides, why do these ladies want to be so emaciated in the first place? Most guys don't like this look. They want substance, if you know what I mean, and I think you do. And people who don't eat properly are prone to serious physical and emotional side effects. I'm sending Kate and Calista giant porterhouse steaks, along with a short note gently suggesting that they are being ridiculous. Pamela Anderson, too much substance, if you know what I mean, and I think you do. This woman used to be really pretty and had a killer body that didn't need any enhancements. Now she looks as if she was chiseled out of stone by a sculptor with Larry Flint's artistic sensibilities. I guess some guys like this look, but I know that what she's done to herself is ridiculous. Besides, fellas, consider this. There's a real possibility you might chip a tooth. Al Sharpton and David Duke. They've got some fierce competition out there, but these two are the most ridiculous racial demagogues in the entire USA. If God has a sense of humor, and I believe he does, these guys will be sharing a sauna in the netherworld with one thermostat. Social promotions. So here's the deal with this ridiculous educational strategy. The schools can't or don't teach some kids anything, but according to the law, the kids have to go to school, even if they're a pain in the rear end. If school authorities insist that they either learn something or be held back, the kids will be around that much longer. So to get rid of them as quickly as possible, teachers promote them through the system and allow them to graduate with a high school diploma. I've seen kids holding a diploma they couldn't even read. Worse, these kids have been taught one lesson very well in their 12 years of so-called schooling. They are not going to be held accountable for failure. When you have a lot of people believing that, you're in real trouble. Did you wonder why the USA has more people in prison than any other free nation in the world? San Francisco! Unmatched in physical beauty, this place has been screwed up by some of its ridiculous citizenry. In a misguided attempt at being compassionate, local politicians set up the most generous welfare system in California. Are we talking widows and orphans getting relief? Nah. What's happened here is that every hophead and juicehead for miles has rolled into town. Been walking near Union Square lately? Aggressive panhandlers are everywhere. Drunks and dope addicts are nodding out in the doorways in full daylight. This is just great stuff for the kids, who expect trolley cars and Fisherman's Wharf and great views of the bay. But the locals don't seem concerned. In the midst of the downtown chaos, Mayor Willie Brown got reelected. This is the guy who proposed giving panhandlers portable credit card machines so that people could donate with plastic. This is the guy whose chief of staff held an orgy at a city party, and guess who showed up? Hello, Mayor Brown! The ridiculous city of San Francisco considers itself a town apart from the rest of America. Well, at least they're right on that. Skin piercing. While tattoos are silly enough, piercing is ridiculous. Do I have to explain why? Okay, it might send a message of nonconformity that will appeal to some elements of society, but it is destructive to your personal image in straight society. So, if you can sing like Sheryl Crow or paint like Picasso, by all means adorn your body with trinkets. You'll never have to ace a job interview. But, if you have to make a living based on your wits, education, and intelligence, do not pierce. If you do, you'll drastically cut your income and life options. TV weather people, help me out here. Am I crazy? Isn't it ridiculous to have 3 minutes of weather reporting during a newscast? These people are usually likable and they seem to know a lot about air masses and reservoir levels, but I don't need that stuff on every broadcast. Just put the weather for the next 3 days up there on the screen and shut up. Okay? Gays in the St. Patrick's Day Parade. This totally ridiculous issue comes up every year in New York City. Now, believe me when I tell you that the parade is taken seriously. There are more Irish Americans in the city of New York than there are in Dublin. The parade is, depending on your point of view, an annual rite of celebration, a drunken party, or an excuse to skip school and work. But everyone agrees it's a great day for the Irish. Traditionally, the parade honors St. Patrick, who spread the word of God in Ireland more than 1,500 years ago. The parade marches up Fifth Avenue past St. Patrick's Cathedral, the largest Roman Catholic cathedral in America. The Cardinal of the Diocese of New York comes out of the church to observe the festivities. Get the picture? Add the various civic groups that march to show their respect to St. Patrick and the traditions of the Irish. Schools march, clubs march, politicians march, but none of these marchers carry signs announcing their sexual preferences. Since the first parade, which may have occurred before 1779, no group has ever participated, carrying a sign that read, "The Foot Fetish Club from Canarsie," nor have the crowds ever been treated to the Staten Island chapter of Wife Swappers LTD, ever. So it is clearly inappropriate for gays to march under a banner stating their sexual preference. That's just not in the context of the theme of the parade. Arguing otherwise is ridiculous. Clichés. My ears hurt. My mind wanders. Sorry, but I can't pay attention to the people, and they're everywhere, who are destroying the English language because they're too lazy to pause for a second, think about what they really mean, and then choose words that are not being said over and over again. It's ridiculous to fall back on words and phrases like awesome, you know, like, get a life, get over it, and the F word. Absolutely, deal with it, exactly, and the rest of the pedestrian jargon that has stifled sensible conversation in America for the past decade. Now, it's true that we've always had dopey phrases in our culture, but today the numbing repetition of mindless words and phrases is actually hindering people from thinking about what they're saying. We have an entire generation of students who believe that overusing such common terms is erudite and insightful. I know. I talk with them when I give speeches at colleges. This blather is ridiculous and annoying. Let's drop the clichés. You don't need to get a life. You need to get a dictionary. Sean Puff Daddy Combs. Ridiculous? Yes, but not a stupid man. He's clever enough to amass a fortune with NVT. That's no visible talent. But what is going on with this guy? He makes his millions and millions from catering to antisocial tastes with mind-numbing rap music. Then he runs out to the Hamptons to party with the likes of Martha Stewart and Donald Trump. Meantime, he's living with some woman with whom he has two young children, but he's also running around in public with diva Jennifer Lopez. This is worse than ridiculous because it's all being closely watched, naturally, by young kids all over America who think Puff Daddy is Swift. Nice message you're sending, Puff Guy. And, incredibly, you've got the establishment on board with you. After Combs and two bodyguards attacked and severely injured a rival record executive, the judge sentenced the Puffster to attend a single session of anger management class. The compassionate jurist also ruled that the conviction would not appear on Combs' permanent record. Nice sentence if you can get it. And an effective deterrent? A few months later, the Puff Monster was arrested in connection with a nasty shooting incident in a Manhattan nightclub. So all in all, this guy is bad news and completely ridiculous. I hope he marries Martha Stewart. What were you thinking, Jennifer? Then there's the tax code. I don't need to tell you this is the most ridiculous thing in America today. Of course, that's been true for a long time. It was the great physicist Albert Einstein who said the hardest thing in the world to understand is the income tax. Well, the reason it's so complicated, Al, is that politicians want to, one, tax the hell out of you, and two, give the government an unfair chance to beat your brains out in court if you take it that far. Most Americans have no idea how much money they fork over, but chances are they are paying tax on every important thing in their life. Food, clothing, fuel, heat, home, car, savings, inheritance, travel, and on and on. Politicians will argue, as many have on my program, that the government needs your money to operate properly. This is a lie. There's more than enough tax revenue available today to pay for the armed forces, roads, police, and other vital services without looting the take-home pay of working Americans. No, the reason our taxes are so punitive is right there in front of you. Obvious and arrogant wastefulness in government-run programs. Forget the 400-buck toilet seats in the Pentagon budget. The real killing waste is in programs that simply do not work. I've already talked about the $30 billion the Clinton administration wastes every year on the so-called drug war. Enough! Wipe out this $30 billion loss by ending the program. Clinton's people have also spent $200 billion in his two terms to improve public education in America. Guess what? It has not improved. Standardized test scores are flat, and that's true even though the tests have been dumbed down. Of course, it doesn't help the situation that many American schools are physically falling apart despite the massive spending at both the federal and the local level. If you're a homeowner, you're probably paying a sizable school tax, even if you have no kids in school. Yet your money has not prevented most of public education from being in disarray. Why? Because the federal government cannot control what happens in local schools. Only local people can make a difference. So what are the feds doing? Throwing money at the problem instead of doing what could bring improvement. I mean, holding teachers accountable and enforcing strict discipline in the classroom and all over the school grounds. These things are free. As a former high school teacher, I can tell you that more tax money is wasted on foolish school programs and lunatic theory than on just about anything else in America. I could give you hundreds of examples of ridiculous government waste, but that would take a whole other program. But you can trust me on this. The tax situation in this country is brutal, including the fact that your elective representatives and their opponents are using entitlements to buy votes. That includes Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Listen very carefully when the polls talk about these hot-button programs. Are they making sense, or are they pandering? You have to decide. The bottom line is that few government programs are run effectively or with discipline. What we call waste or pork is re-election insurance to our leaders. Besides, the prevailing wisdom is that there will always be more tax money coming in, so don't sweat it. Is it time for another tea party like the one given in honor of King George III in Boston Harbor? I'll meet you at the water's edge near the Big Dig. Finally, in the realm of the ridiculous, the most ridiculous part of our American system is this. Different rules apply to the rich guys. It's not supposed to be that way, right? Our country was designed to be for the people, not the rich people. But in today's America, there are two kinds of justice, one for the rich like O.J. Simpson and the other for poverty-stricken thugs who get socked with tough sentences. Yeah, money buys too much in America, including things that should never be for sale. So, money can sabotage our system of justice by buying clever attorneys who know just how to confuse, manipulate, and intimidate juries. As the campaign fundraising scandals blatantly demonstrate, cash can also buy you access to a president. It certainly influences Congress, thus preventing any real reform. It also discourages our elected officials from acting with fiscal responsibility when spending public monies. It also corrupts law enforcement from sea to shining sea. There are solutions, but it will take discipline to make them work. Reform should start with the press. Rather than ridiculously glorifying the Donald Trumps and Ted Turners, journalists and all media should go back to working-class sensibilities and values. If reporters would regularly expose the corruption that is all around us, but which they take for granted as part of the normal way of doing things in politics and business, then it would become much harder to play the money game. Why doesn't that happen? Well, as I mentioned earlier, it's because the press is mostly owned these days by people who are very rich themselves. They sign the reporters' paychecks. But they also make money only when you buy their newspapers or watch their news programs. If you support honest reporting, things might start to change. To sum up, we have a ridiculous blind spot in America, the power and glorification of money. It's holding us all back. It's ridiculous, and it's related to some of the worst things I talk about next in the bad factor. When I use the word bad, I mean awful. Bad is so annoying that you want to club it with a baseball bat and bury it forever. But that's not possible. The bad in America is with us wherever we go. Whatever we do, it still raises its ugly head. In our times, technology makes the bad worse because it cannot distinguish between bad and good. It just spreads it all around wildly. For some reason, millions of us embrace the bad. I know because at times I'm one of them. My excuse, I find bad things funny. But that is merely an excuse, and I'm not proud that I pay good money to see bad movies and eat bad food and read bad books. On the other hand, sometimes I just get hoodwinked. And often I am too lazy to seek out the good stuff. It's usually more difficult to work my way through, or it costs more. That's the difference between a cheap mass-market paperback thriller and a new hardcover book about history or politics. There are so many bad things in America, I'm only going to give a sampling. Any U.S. airline. Okay, it's a little bit worse for me because of my height. Still, anyone who boards an airline in America these days is bound to feel like a POW along the River Kwai. Same food, meager and foul-tasting. Same accommodations, cramped and dirty. Same attendance, surly and, generally speaking, apathetic. Standards began collapsing when Jimmy Carter deregulated the airlines. Seemed like a good idea at the time. Let market forces rule the skies. In practice, it has led to decreased service to many mid-sized and small markets, and flying anywhere is now a painful experience to anyone over 5'6". Seats were downsized along with the IQ levels of the average employee because salaries were cut. The entire system has since become a chaotic mess. Now Congress is threatening to get involved. That means the mess will probably get even worse. But somebody has to do something. I can ignore the food, I can survive the flight attendants. But for the sake of humanity, the airlines ought to have enough people on staff to check in the flight without forcing people to wait an hour or more online. And for heaven's sake, they ought to take a row or two of seats out of the cabin. That way, people like me won't have to practice involuntary yoga. Rice cakes, bad. No matter what you put on them, you are still eating dust, plaster, cardboard, loam. There is no excuse for eating rice cakes at any time. Suburban utility vehicles. If you don't believe these monstrosities are bad in every way, just look at some of the Americans who drive them. These people think they're riding stallions or something. Their eyes gleam at the power rumbling beneath them. They tailgate viciously, speed in all kinds of weather, and generally zip around as if they're invincible. When they race up near my Yugo, I tremble in fear. If I ever get rear-ended by one of these gas guzzlers, I'll land in Yugoslavia. All right, you would never drive a Yugo, but these SUVs are a menace to any sensibly sized, sensibly priced, economically fueled car. You find a parking space, but when you return to your car, you're squeezed between two SUVs. It's impossible to see traffic or pedestrians as you back out. It's even worse on the road. The women who drive them are especially crazed. The SUV is their great equalizer on the road. As her little kids freeze in terror, Mom weaves in and out of traffic, flipping the bird to anyone who doesn't like it. Maybe now we know the answer to Sigmund Freud's famous question, what do women want? SUVs should immediately be outlawed, but they won't be. I may have to buy a Bradley fighting vehicle and exact my just revenge. Roseanne! I don't care how many people watched it faithfully, her sitcom was bad. Her trash-mouth character didn't represent working-class America. It was a put-down. Her recent talk show was not just bad. It was incredibly bad. How this woman became rich and famous is a mystery that ranks right up there with the lost continent of Atlantis. NFL gear. What do these National Football League marketing people think of us? Their garish caps, jackets, double-knit jerseys are eye pollution. The worst is the uniform of the Denver Broncos, evidently designed by a Mongolian nomad who knew nothing about Colorado or the franchise and who was working over a hangover from fermented yak butter. Are there no mirrors in Colorado? Steak tartare. Just what is this? Raw meat, right? Well, actually, it's raw minced beefsteak. But that's just the beginning. It's then mixed with onions, seasonings, and to continue the theme, raw eggs. I don't want to eat this. I don't want to watch anyone eating it. But if you like it, enjoy. And get a side order of rice cakes. Leonardo DiCaprio. This guy was so bad in Titanic that I was rooting for the iceberg. It's not bad enough that he's in the most hyped movie of the century. He's also in our face all the time with his personal escapades. He flits around New York and L.A. with a gang of hooligans running up huge bar tabs and getting his name in gossip columns. And don't blame the gossip columnists. Do you think they get every one of their items from old-fashioned shoe leather journalism? No. A lot of that stuff you see is paid for by restaurants or stars through their publicity reps. Anyway, all of the publicity makes you wonder all the more what Leonardo really has done. He's bad, and his recent movies have sunk faster than the famed ocean liner. Also, his interview with President Clinton on the environment proudly upheld Leo's bad status. Onion-flavored potato chips. Is there a reason to eat these things? No. They are bad for you, and they are also bad for the plants and humans you breathe on after eating them. Warren Beatty. This actor, once handsome but now as thick and jolly as Nixon, is a kind of senior citizen's Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah, he's done some good work, such as Bonnie and Clyde, but seriously, Dick Tracy? What was that all about? And Reds? Communism is swell? Easy to say when you're living in Bel Air or Malibu. The best thing about Beatty is his sister, Shirley MacLaine, always amusing. The second best is his wife, Annette Bening. I just don't see what the Academy of Arts and Sciences sees when they voted him a Lifetime Achievement Award. Did that include Bullworth? It was bad. And he was worse. Abortion. This is bad not just for the fetus, but for all Americans. I'm not preaching here, but the destructiveness of the procedure does cheapen life. That's inevitable. We should all calm down and reevaluate the entire debate. It doesn't help to say that abortion is a lesser evil than interfering with a woman's right to control her own body. I understand that. It doesn't help to argue about exactly when life begins. No one knows. But Americans should abhor abortion, not champion it. Everything should be done to avoid it. It's brutal. Brutality is always bad. Let's drop the spin words pro-life and pro-choice. Let's go back to the basic problem and come up with answers that are not as violent as the act of abortion or as the actions of some demented anti-abortion activists. Barbara Streisand. Can't knock her singing except for some misguided screeches, but as for her acting, please, did anyone see Yentl? Then tell me why that picture was made, except as a weird ego trip for the star. Robert Redford can be very convincing as an actor, but he flopped at convincing me that he was actually going after Barbara in The Way We Were. And how about The Mirror Has Two Faces? Did you see that? Nobody did, except me. And I had to because I was doing a newspaper column on Streisand. Barbara herself didn't even see the movie. She knew it was bad and stayed home. Donald Trump. What's up with the hair, Donald? Things are bad up there. He tried a scalp reduction operation a few years ago, but it wasn't a huge success, they say. Maybe that's why he's so mean-spirited. Not long ago, he tried to throw some little old lady off her property in Atlantic City. Bad. But she was a tough bird who ran an Italian restaurant for years, and she fought back with lawyers. She won, but it cost her. This is a guy who said he would be good for the country as our next president. How so? Would we all be forced to live in condos? Trump is rich, which is supposedly good in America, but the man is bad, and he knows it. Phone solicitors. This has got to be the most terrible job in America, but that's no excuse. How can you face yourself if you spend your work shift annoying people in their homes, often at dinner time, by trying to sell them stuff they don't want and using bad grammar while you're doing it? These people are as bad as their jobs, I believe. They should be ashamed, but they're not. And that makes them not only bad, but stupid as well. Wayne Newton. I've seen this guy perform live and thought calling the whole show bad was being too generous. He opened with an Elvis tune. If the king really were still alive, we'd know it. He'd come out of hiding and jam a blue suede shoe right down Wayne's gullet. Jesse Helms. This guy is old and hates Wayne Newton, but that doesn't count for much since he hates just about everything and everybody and is still holding a grudge over the Civil War. Sorry, Jesse, the War of Northern Aggression. He symbolizes the worst in American politics, aside from being Big Tobacco's fiercest champion. The good voters of North Carolina deserve better, but Jesse's divisive take-no-prisoners campaigns bring out the crazies and scare off potential opponents. He's a bad thinker, legislator, and storyteller. When people call him a staunch conservative, they mean unable to hear anything anybody else is saying. Bad, bad, bad. Ted Kennedy. The poster boy for a bad physique, he has explained to reporters, it's the sauce, boys. This rich guy has somehow acquired a reputation as a devoted champion of the poor and downtrodden, but he has never associated much with any person fitting that description. In his somewhat younger years, he was the top bad boy on Capitol Hill for a long time, mostly because he never met a waitress he didn't try to shag. No longer a boy by any definition, he's still bad, no matter how he tries to hide it. This is a karma thing with Kennedy, and you know what I'm talking about. Tattoos. You want to look like Dennis Rodman? Tattoos are kind of a label, but they don't say what the wearers think they say. They don't say I'm hip and cool and unique and pushing the envelope. Nope, they say, beneath these silly pictures and slogans on my skin, I'm a dunce. With a tattoo, you are never going to make it in the white-collar world of America. That's your choice, of course, and I leave that to you. But a tattoo is a bad thing if you care about your earning power. Michael Jackson, Jesse Jackson. Not related, but both bad. Michael was born with incredible talent and worked hard to develop it, but his personal life has turned him into an international pariah, and deservedly so. Did he have a strange childhood, and does he have serious psychological problems now? Sure, but he's an adult in terms of years, and it's time to work it out, Michael. You have no one to blame but yourself for your stunts today. Your weird public behavior and odd relationships offstage cannot be excused. An exception, what goes on between him and that monkey is his own business. Your flat-out bad actions have wrecked your career in America. Again, we might be seeing karma in motion. What goes around comes around. And what about Jesse Jackson? Well, he's still around, the reverend who's a millionaire, even though he's never had a job in the private sector except some weekly CNN show that's really bad and doesn't pay well. His latest book took a lot of gall. It's called It's About the Money. Yeah, it is, in your case, Reverend. But how'd you get all that money? Who gave it to you? This guy has bad written all over him, and not by a ghostwriter. Chinese food in America. I know, since everybody likes the stuff, it's un-American to say it's bad, but it is. The Chinese don't eat MSG in China. They don't eat fuyang or whatever they're serving down at the corner restaurant. I've never trusted the Chinese food you get in this country because it's so gooey, I can't tell what's in there. And it's even worse if you make the mistake of ordering takeout. The goo becomes congealed, and there's always something missing. Those little boxes look as if they have live goldfish in them, and everything looks and smells the same. Bad. Martha Stewart, a first-rate con artist who fights with nearly everyone in her quest for fame and riches, Miss Stewart has created a fantasy about herself and the good life that is bad for common sense and your pocketbook. Check out the price for a quart of her house paint. While she masquerades as a paragon of good taste, she has turned herself into a snooty, condescending mogul of trivia. The woman has convinced millions that she is Harriet Nelson for the 21st century, but she isn't. Harriet's TV image was about values and caring. Martha's is about material things and showing off instead of being aware of the world outside your house. Harriet was good. Martha is bad. I mean, she leaves a bad taste. Hold the applause if you can. Monica Lewinsky. Okay, I've made the point elsewhere, so I'll be brief. The princess of bad attitude? Miss Lewinsky continues to win sympathy from some Americans. That's bad. She ought to get a job and keep her mouth shut in all situations. If she takes responsibility for her life and stops whining, I'll never mention her again, except possibly in something like the next section. Sushi. No way. The dictionary definition of sushi is raw fish that has been handled by 16 people before it gets to me. It's not hard to figure out that that means bad. Charles Grodin, a really good actor. Mr. Grodin was such a bad talk show host that NBC sacked him. Is this a case of an airhead actor needing a script to come across well? Whatever. No one ever knew what he was trying to say on the air. What's that? It took a lot of work to watch Grodin. You weren't waiting for the other shoe to drop. You were waiting for any shoe to drop. That's not good for a talk show host. That's bad. Daytime TV. Firemen on 24-hour alert have to watch this stuff. Think about that the next time they ask for a raise. ER personnel have it playing in the background. You might want to page your own doctor quick. From Springer and Montel to Jenny and Sally to the soaps and the judges to the girl chat programs, daytime TV is worse than a desert. Deserts are usually quiet. You do not want to find yourself hooked on this swill. In my opinion, daytime TV is the true reason U.S. unemployment is so low. I mean, would you rather watch a cooking show or sling hash at a diner? Easy question. Johnny Cochran. Does anyone believe that Cochran, who's obviously pretty slick, thinks that O.J. Simpson is innocent? All right. So how can this guy run around talking about justice when he helped spring a killer? I know everyone is legally entitled to a fair trial, but fair trial does not mean playing the race card. Cochran did that big time with a naive and minimally educated jury, and it worked. But this victory seems to be very good for Cochran's pocketbook. That's bad, Johnny. We haven't forgotten your role in the Simpson fiasco, and we're not gonna. Whenever you get up on the next soapbox, everything you say about justice will be taken in context of your cynical perversion of justice in that L.A. courtroom. Does the name Nicole ring a bell, counselor? Sex Talk Radio. Hey, Tom Likas, it's Larry from Cleveland. Yeah, I got a problem with this chick. She won't put out even though I bought her a dinner. What should I do now? I've got some very useful advice for Larry, but he won't like it. And there's nothing to say about such programs except they're indescribably bad, so I'm not going to describe them. Howard Stern. 15 years ago, I loved this guy, who was a classmate of mine at Boston University. I admired his daring on the radio and his irreverent anti-authority brand of humor. But then Howard became obsessed with lesbians. Now, many men have fantasies about ladies mingling. That's not unusual. But to talk about it every day of the week for 4 hours beginning at 6 a.m. is in the same league as his sex potions. Howard, it's 6:20 in the morning. Give the lesbian some time off. And the audience, too. Stern's shtick is getting tired and, unfortunately, bad. As I said earlier, I would have to leave a lot of bad people and things out of this section, and you know that some new culprits will arrive on the scene between the time I record this program and it gets into your hands. Don't worry, I'm keeping track of the bad factor every night on the O'Reilly Factor. There will always be so much bad stuff that no one can list it all. So if I've left out any of your favorite bad things and bad people, maybe next time. But we can't end on that note. There are plenty of good things in America, and you know what? The list is even longer, so I will be leaving out even more. In the next section, I'm going to list a few personal favorites, but I hope that's just a way of reminding you of your own. For the rest of the program, let's be totally positive. And why not? There are more good things in America than anywhere else on Earth. I can only list a fraction of them, and there's not much to say about them because you'll recognize right away what I mean. If you're afraid I'm going to start sounding like Up With People or something, skip this part. The next section, which is very short, is the last important thing I have to say. But if you'd like to join me in thinking about some of the good things and people that enrich our lives in America, here we go. Bill Cosby. Maybe he comes across as a little bitter sometimes, but he's honestly funny. In fact, I prefer him when, as in his earlier solo stuff, he doesn't get cloying in situation comedy style. Even now, though, Cosby is capable of keenly insightful jokes that can be devastating. Kindly Dr. Huxtable has a very sharp mental scalpel, and through his positive image on TV, Cosby has presented an admirable role model. Bill Murray. With good material, Murray is the funniest human being in the country. Even with bad material, he's always watchable. He's got that great gift of making you think that only you and he are in on the joke, even though tens of millions of other people are watching and getting the same feeling. Mike Myers, the ultimate funny yuppie. Myers is the most creative performer I've ever seen. How did this Canadian get our culture down pat? In person, he makes you wonder if he might really be out of his mind, though he's very much a gentleman, and he certainly deserves the big bucks for the two Austin Powers flicks. Some of his cleverest characters are in the SNL skits. Even though Myers did a cloying Oscars interview with Barbara Walters, he's still damn good. Paul Newman. This 75-year-old sex symbol made a pact with the devil. I know it. He can still steal the screen from many young actors, men and women, by just raising an eyebrow. But it's one thing to maintain a magnetic screen presence into senior citizenhood. Much more important, Newman raises millions for ailing children. Warren Beatty talks big. Paul Newman walks big. Charlton Heston. His conservative politics probably keeps some critics and other people from appreciating his great talent, but he commands the screen no matter how hokey the flick. A director friend once shot a 60-second public service spot with this very professional actor at Heston's Hollywood home. Heston looked at the script for the first time, walked once around his pool, then sat down before the cameras. "Would you like to take time to memorize your lines and rehearse, Mr. Heston?" my friend asked. "Son," said the actor, "I've been doing this for a while. Just roll the cameras." The take was letter perfect. During some of the most recent uproar about his work for the National Rifle Association, Heston was satirized in an op-ed piece by Gary Crist for the New York Times. Heston tracked down the writer's home telephone number and called to say, "That was very funny." It's good to have some humor injected into this thing. Good, sane Heston is a gentleman. Luther Vandross. His early stuff was the best to my ears. Now he has a tendency to Barry White the romantic ballads, and that's not fair to his own originality. Still, Vandross's music is almost perfect. It holds up well after many airings, and I say that here and now. Santa Claus. Originally Dutch, he was brought over as a folk tradition by the folks who settled the present-day New York area, calling it New Amsterdam. When that colony collapsed and the English moved in, they took over Santa Claus, too. Now we Americans own the rights. He is a great role model for kids, so keep the faith going as long as you can. The kids will thank you for it when they're adults. Everyone remembers when they discovered that Santa Claus might not exist. Can't prove it to me. Aretha Franklin. According to published reports, the woman can be quite a behavioral problem. Okay, I'll steer clear of her, but her recordings will stay with me forever. She's laid down no better single than Chain of Fools. Gene Hackman. The best character actor alive, he and his agent had to fight hard to get the lead in The French Connection, but that hit movie is unimaginable without him. He never overdoes a role, even though he's been signed to do some intense villains and maniacs. Check out his Lex Luthor in the Superman movies for a different side, a comic brilliance that is quite a surprise after so much serious stuff. Dennis the Menace and the Peanuts Gang. All put together, these are the greatest kids on the planet. They were my childhood role models, along with Eddie Haskell. Make of that whatever you will. The Hardy Boys. I'm talking about the original brothers in the Dixon books, not the bland Frank and Joe in Disney's TV series. And I don't much like the new Hardy Boys paperback books being written by a slew of writers today. Too much violence and realism. No, if you have young boys, make sure they go back to the originals. Janet Jackson. Don't know why, but I like her. Janet is a lively performer who seems to understand the word melody. This, of course, separates her from most of the other top rock performers of the day. Steven Spielberg. With his technical expertise and superb visual sense, he's a great movie maker. Sometimes his movies try too hard to make a political statement, maybe, but every one of them has been interesting. That's something you can't say about the work of another great filmmaker, Francis Ford Coppola. And Spielberg is always trying something new. At his best, he comes up with deep insights into the human condition. Tom Hanks, this great actor, is also a hysterical comedian, an extremely rare combination, although too many actors and comedians today don't realize it. He's also rumored to be a nice guy, but I don't know that from my own experience. I first noted Hanks in a TV series called Bosom Buddies, in which, for some reason, he ran around every week dressed like a girl. Even then, you could see the guy had star power. Robin Williams. I mean, Robin Williams the comedian, not R.W. the actor. When he goes for the heartstrings, he tries too hard, and it's not convincing. But he was terrifically funny in Good Morning Vietnam, Mrs. Doubtfire, and The Birdcage. These were cartoon characters, but it worked. Williams is unusually smart, bringing in several levels of humor at once and juggling words like crazy. But sometimes the wit is lost in the swirl of his hyper-delivery. Jonathan Winters. Williams' acknowledged role model, Winters, is one of the funniest men who's ever lived. He has been very underappreciated in America because it's so hard to harness his wild genius in the usual formats. If you've never seen him, try his comedy albums. They are the best of all time, and that includes the albums of Mel Brooks, Carl Reiner, Richard Pryor, and George Carlin. And I believe those guys would agree with me. Sam Donaldson. You have to know something about backstage TV to understand how good Donaldson is. He's a risk-taker in an industry dominated by phonies and charlatans and yes-men. And he's never boring. Even if you think he can be obnoxious, I think you have to agree that he's proved over and over he has guts, and that is rare in TV news. Charles Rangel, the congressman from Harlem, may be to the left of Karl Marx, but he will show up anywhere to defend his positions, and he does so with good humor. I always enjoy sparring with Rangel, and I find he's always worth listening to. Why? Because he's a hardscrabble guy who actually cares about his constituents. If we had more elected officials like Rangel from left to center to right of the political spectrum, this would be more like the country designed by our founding fathers. Doris Day. For my eyes, she's quite simply the prettiest, most all-American actress ever. She's also a comedian with a deft touch. It's become chic to laugh at just about everything in the 50s, and that includes such Doris Day classics as Pillow Talk. Well, go out and rent one of her hits, and you might be surprised. They've gotten better with age. Mike Wallace. If you're still the best interviewer in the television business at age 82, you're doing something right. Maybe that's because he's still just as competitive as when he started out. Paul Harvey, even further into his 80s than Wallace. He's as good on radio as Mike is on television. In fact, I consider Harvey to be the best radio man ever. In person, he's much more soft-spoken than you'd expect, but when the studio light turns on, this pro booms out his stories and opinions in a voice that still gets people thinking all over America. Dave Barry. He's the funniest writer in America, and it has nothing to do with his haircut. Barry's yuppie frame of reference, which you might think has already been covered by others, is staggeringly original and funny, and I am not making this up. Elvis Presley. Despite the outfits from hell, those capes and sequins, there's never been a better onstage performer, at least not in my lifetime. Even if he was usually in a haze, he somehow knew exactly how to engage the crowd on every song. He made Frank Sinatra look like Frosty the Snowman. Anne Margaret. She was reputed to be a close friend of Elvis. Whether that's true or not, she is perhaps the sexiest woman in the country. If you haven't seen her in Viva Las Vegas, you must do so immediately. As I recall, Miss Margaret didn't need silicone-enhanced boobs or lip implants or fake cheekbones. She still sends Pamela Anderson to the back of the line. Steve Allen. This totally original comic mind is the godfather of talk TV. Aside from some of his dopey songs and half-baked political ideas, he was great hosting The Tonight Show. With his topical humor, he opened the way to the equally brilliant Johnny Carson and the less brilliant Jay Leno. Elaine May. It's simple. She's the funniest woman in America. She and Mike Nichols burst on the scene with their comic skits in the late 1950s. No one ever hit the nation's funny bone in quite the same way. It was dry wit that had people rolling in the aisles. If you have no idea who she is, check out the movie The Birdcage with Robin Williams and Nathan Lane. Nichols directed and Elaine May wrote the screenplay. Michael Jordan. Okay, he did make the grade in minor league baseball, and his golf outings leave him pretty much in the duffer class, but the greatest basketball player of all time is also the best athlete I've ever seen play in any sport. Robert Kennedy Sr. He was the toughest politician I ever saw. He said that he never forgot a friend or an enemy, and I believe him. He took on the mob and the corrupt unions. Biographers say he was ruthless, but there's no question that Bobby Kennedy was also ruthlessly effective. He did what all politicians should be doing. He tried to right wrongs. Willie Mays. His stats are legendary, but there was more to Mays than the numbers. The whole package, man and talent, made him the best baseball player I have ever seen. Clint Eastwood. I mentioned our encounter earlier, and you know that he's been my role model on bad days. He was the shrewdest actor-director I've ever met. If he went downhill after Unforgiven, give the guy credit. After all, he dug pools for a living before becoming the biggest movie star in the world. Pete Hamill. I've never read a better columnist and print journalist. He's honest and unafraid. He knows that this country is based upon the hard work of blue-collar Americans. Hamill remains a role model to me this very day. William Safire, the smartest newspaper columnist I've ever read, has also got to be one of the hardest working. Agree with him or not, you can see that he always does his homework before spouting his opinion, and he does not rest on his laurels. Mike Royko, based in Chicago. He didn't get as much attention, maybe, as the journalists in New York and Washington, but he was the toughest newspaper columnist I ever read. His death left a huge vacuum in journalism, but was a relief for some of the scoundrels who inhabit the Windy City. Peter Gent, this former Dallas Cowboy football player, wrote the finest sports novel ever, North Dallas 40. Don't rely on the movie, find the book and read it. Michael Crichton and Tom Clancy. Crichton's Rising Sun and Clancy's Red Storm Rising are the two most entertaining American novels I've come across. Maybe something about the word rising does it for me, but both men know how to keep a story rocketing along. They also pack their novels with fascinating facts about how the real world really works. The Stand by Stephen King. There's no better piece of science fiction in or out of print, and that includes Jules Verne and Isaac Asimov. Shibumi by Trevanian. This is by far the most gripping thriller I've ever read. I don't know how he does it. From writing my own novel, I've learned it's not as easy as it looks. The Legend of Sleepy Hollow by Washington Irving. Call it fantasy, a horror story, literary folktale, whatever you want, it's the best. Do not see director Tim Burton's ridiculous movie of the same name unless you just want to see how brilliant storytelling can be turned into childish nonsense. The Doors. Okay, I'm sorry about Jim Morrison. I can't defend his outrages or his self-destruction. I wish all of these guys had more sense about their personal lives. But in the end, all I care about is their music, and they were the best hard rock group ever. The Beach Boys. Forget about the sentimental, confused TV docudrama or whatever it was. These guys are responsible for the most fun songs ever. That's all I need to know about them. Earth, Wind, and Fire. Tops in the R&B category. By the way, if you don't like R&B, try them as an introduction. Same for The Doors. If you think you don't like hard rock, try them. You might be surprised. When somebody's the best in anything, it's worth your time. Okay, you've heard me out on some of the good people I know something about. They give me pleasure, sanity, entertainment, in a world that can be crazy and disappointing some days. They remind me of the good things in American life, and there are many good things. For example, we take for granted the amazing convenience that's available to practically all of us, especially in the matter of feeding our faces. We don't have the best food in the world because we race around like lemmings, but we do have the most variety. In many parts of the country, restaurants and grocery stores are open around the clock, and we have the best junk food on the planet, including Breyers ice cream, Nathan's hot dogs, Pizza Hut deep dish, and Snapple orange drink. In addition to convenience, we have the widest variety of diversions. Even if you're a miserable grouch who hates everything, you can find some diverting entertainment. The listings for live music, sports, traveling shows, fairs, rodeos, exhibitions, lectures, and all the rest in even a medium-sized town are usually amazing throughout the year. Or you can click through hundreds of cable TV channels. Yeah, I made fun of some of them earlier, but if you have special interests and you read the schedule carefully, you're likely to find something good every night of the week. If you join the 21st century, you're hooked up to the Internet, a continually growing resource of information and conversation. And then there's your local library, where every kind of book imaginable is free. Try getting that in Cuba. You'll be cutting sugarcane for the rest of your life. And aside from watching sports live or on TV, this country is chock full of people who like to keep playing until they drop. You are bound to be near some kind of league doing something. Anyone can bowl. Softball teams are available for all age groups and talent levels. There are pickup games of basketball and baseball in most parks. Health clubs are everywhere, so it's easy to find an affordable place to swim, jog, lift weights, or simply baste in the sauna, pretending to be Finnish. I mean, only a moron can be bored in America. Take a trip to Belgium and then tell me America isn't a land of diversion and entertainment. Soon, if the experts are right, the technology of virtual reality will allow you to experience just about everything without having to leave your home. 24 hours a day of this would not be a good idea, of course. Leaving the house and getting out into the real world is what life is all about. But occasionally, when you're tired someday, the virtual option can provide an interesting break, right? Hello, Holly Berry. Is that really you inside the virtual reality gizmo? And speaking of options, we have religious options, style options, lifestyle options, vacation options, transportation options, and on and on. Americans have more options in more areas than anyone else on this earth. The Swiss, I believe fondue, Alps, and yodeling just about covers it. Talk radio in Luzerne? No way. Professional wrestling in the shadow of the Matterhorn? Doesn't happen. The NFL? Can't get it, Klaus. Back to the slopes with your toboggan guy. Maybe it's jingoistic, but I thank God I was born here in America, even though it was in New York City. My parents brought my sister and me into a world of plenty, even if our seats weren't all that great. But that was just the luck of the draw. I could just have easily been conceived in Islamabad. In that case, I'd be much more familiar with the habits of a cobra, maybe, but I would have missed out on Howdy Doody, the Mouseketeers, and the Untouchables. I wouldn't have played Little League Baseball and high school ice hockey or had my first slow dance to the hit single, Hey Paula. But what better tells a story about America than the movies we love? I can't end a discussion about The Good Factor without listing my favorites. After all, despite Fellini and Kurosawa and David Lean and a few Frenchmen whose names I forget, American movies are still the best in the world. Here's what I like and why. The Godfather Parts 1 and 2. For my money, these are the best films ever made. Unlike the jumbled Godfather Part 3, they are rich in every way. Superb acting, brilliantly written scripts, and fantastic production values. Besides, a film is destined for historical importance when it contains the immortal line, "Leave the gun, take the cannolis." Casablanca. The famous story goes that they had almost finished filming this classic before they could decide how to end it. No wonder, because no viewer ever wants it to end. Made on the cheap, the film captures the menace of the conquering Nazis in an exotic Moroccan setting. Humphrey Bogart, Peter Lorre, and Claude Rains turn in great performances that are truly unforgettable, but somebody forgot to wake up Ingrid Bergman. She's beautiful, but only semi-conscious. Dracula. Of all the attempts, the best take on Bram Stoker's novel is the one starring Bela Lugosi. It has the best line, and he delivers it perfectly. I never drink wine. The Wizard of Oz. Judy Garland's a little old, and the special effects aren't much better than you'd get at Photomat, but no one's ever complained. The thing works. It's the best kids' movie of all time. There's no better witch anywhere than Margaret Hamilton. You hate her. You love her. The best line, Oleo. Oleo. The Producers. Quite simply, the funniest movie ever made. It is also one of the smartest. Zero Mostel, Gene Wilder, and Mel Brooks collaborated on this caper movie, with its notorious musical, Springtime for Hitler. Yeah, this kind of joke and most of the movie require a frame of reference that may be lacking in the audience for American Pie. Because the script's so witty and the three stars are obviously improvising like crazy, you have to see the flick at least three times to catch all the fun. Schindler's List. You will feel you are actually in a concentration camp. This terrifying but inspiring story is a tremendous achievement. It will stay with you forever. Unlike a later film also directed by Spielberg, Saving Private Ryan, the film understates its violence, making it possible for a larger audience to see it. The Exorcist. Max von Sydow, the great Swedish actor, is unforgettable in his film, which is both scary as hell and historically accurate. The best line, I used to be a good Catholic, Father. The Shootist. John Wayne's last film is the best Western I've ever seen. One of the classic acting moments of all time is the first meeting between the Duke and Richard Boone. If you've ever doubted Wayne's savvy as an actor, you have to see him in this movie. Sure, he had more presence than anyone else, but he also had the talent to go along with it. Dr. No, the first James Bond film, may be the best. For the first time, we saw Sean Connery, who gives one of the most dominating film performances ever. For my money, he still owns the role. He could play it in a wheelchair in his 80s, and I'd believe it. And then there's Ursula Andress. She's very convincing, largely because she has only 6 words of dialogue and lets her bikini do the rest of the talking. The Bridge on the River Kwai. In my book, this is the best war film ever made. Alec Guinness is spectacular. David Niven and William Holden aren't slouches either. Like Schindler's List, this is also great movie-making that puts you believably inside a concentration camp, this time along with POWs. The best scene? Captured soldiers, tortured by being forced to stand in the hot sun. A Shot in the Dark. Peter Sellers was great almost all the time, but this is his funniest role of all. And that includes the Pink Panther flicks and Dr. Strangelove. With Sellers, you got unbelievable comic timing, along with perfectly coordinated facial expressions. Don't even blink your eyes or you'll miss the full impact of Sellers' genius. Some Like It Hot. You certainly know about this one. Marilyn Monroe, Jack Lemmon, and Tony Curtis, with the boys running away from the gangsters by disguising themselves as members of an all-girl band. Even Curtis is good in this very funny, very clever romp. Marilyn is her legendary self, and her eyes are unusually clear for once. Saturday Night Fever. I've already told you about my own disco fever. This movie perfectly captures a Brooklyn subculture of the 70s that had echoes in towns all across the country. Look beyond the disco madness and you'll see some of the best character acting ever. Best line, "Don't hit the hair. I spend a lot of time on the hair and you gotta go hit it." And Travolta, he does the role so accurately that we all thought that's all he could do because he was just being himself. He's been proving us wrong in a huge range of parts ever since. The Birds. Even people who never saw it think they saw it. The film is part of our culture and part of our language. Hitchcock scared the pants off us with some of nature's most harmless creatures. Check out Tippi Hedren. She really looks frightened. And that's before she had Don Johnson for a son-in-law. Rod Taylor just looks confused. It's the birds who look as if they're having a blast. Bonnie and Clyde. This is pure hokum and pure entertainment. Gene Hackman is terrific as Buck Barrow. Even my pal Warren Beatty is good in this one. For once, he actually seems to be playing a character. Well, that's enough. If I've missed your favorites, don't write me a nasty letter, but I would like you to write me on another subject, as I explain in the next section. Talking Point. Thanks for listening to this program. I am very grateful. Time is tight for just about everybody these days, and you're probably bombarded by all kinds of information and opinions, so thanks for taking the time. Because I appreciate your interest, I look forward to your feedback. You can write to me. Bill O'Reilly, Fox News Channel, 1211 Avenue of the Americas, New York, New York, 10036, or you can email me at O'Reilly@foxnews.com. First of all, I want to know whether or not you found this audiobook worthwhile. I intend to continue in this format, but if I can help it, I don't want to waste anyone's time. Second, I want to know exactly what you liked and what you didn't like. If I've been unclear or incomplete or dead wrong in your view, I want to know about it. Your comments might raise the kind of issue that I need to address down the road on the air or in my weekly columns or in the next audiobook. I want my viewers and listeners to be an active part of my ongoing discussion of what's good, bad, and ridiculous about our great country. And if this program has enhanced your life in any way, I'd certainly like to know about it. What I most wanted this program to accomplish was to instill in you a belief that you can realize your dreams and goals. As I've emphasized throughout, that takes discipline and determination, at least to do it honestly. But it also takes an awareness of the big picture in today's America. The formula is simple. Face the truth, then make the best of it. When you find yourself challenged by a tense situation, factor in the message of this program. Understand the game, and you'll win if you work your tail off and stay honest. What I'm talking about here is your personal factor. Use it. And as you do, I wish you the very best. After all, that's the least I can do for someone who has honored me by listening to this program. This is Bill O'Reilly. We hope you have enjoyed this production of The O'Reilly Factor. This program was produced and directed by David Rapkin, abridgment by Eleanor Branch, copyright 2000 by Bill O'Reilly. Production copyright 2000, Random House Incorporated, all rights reserved. The book, The O'Reilly Factor, is available wherever Broadway books are sold.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.